morning. I'm Representative Steve Ellison, the co-chair of the Interim Revenue and Taxation Committee and the House Chair of the Revenue and Taxation Committee. I'm a CPA by training. I like to say I'm a recovering auditor. So I wanted to, before we get into some of our basics for tax reform, talk about one emerging issue that I think you'll want to keep your eye on, and then one potential personal tax planning tip. So the first thing I want to talk about is a movement afoot in a number of states, particularly high tax states, where the states are looking to run legislation to allow contributions or the payment of state and local taxes, so income taxes, property taxes, as charitable contributions. And according to a California state senator, Senator De Leon, I believe, there's a revenue ruling from the IRS from 2011, still trying to source this so I can verify it. But supposedly this revenue ruling says that you can set up a charitable like 501c3 that can receive contributions for state taxes, which then get forwarded directly to the state or county, whatever governmental entity is receiving those taxes. And you might think, well, why does that matter? Well, under the new tax bill that just passed, state and local taxes are capped at $10,000 for itemized deductions. Charitable contributions are not capped. So let's just use an example of a family that paid $30,000 in state taxes. For 2017, the year just finished, if they were filing a tax return, that $30,000 would be entirely deductible, assuming that they itemized. As of January 1st this year, let's say they still pay $30,000, $10,000 is going to be deductible because that's the new cap in the federal tax law, so $20,000 wouldn't be deductible. However, if they gave that $30,000 to a kind of pseudo-government charity, then they could deduct the full $30,000, retain the tax benefit. So a number of states are looking to put legislation in place to allow taxpayers to do this. I think that the jury is definitely out with the IRS, even if there is a revenue ruling from years ago that says that that is allowable. I think that, at least in Utah, we should keep a very close eye on that, because if it is allowed, I think it's important to quote Judge Learned Hand, a very well-known judge that said that taxpayers do not even have a patriotic duty to pay one more penny in income taxes than they're required under the law. So I think this strategy is, it's interesting. That's one reason our federal tax code is about, you know, 20 feet deep. But it's something we're going to be taking a look at. One other side note related to this, which is not nearly as controversial, I don't think it's really controversial at all, is a topic called, a tax planning strategy called bunching. So you may have seen a recent article, I think it was, some of the local media outlets covered it, that a bunch of people rushed to prepay their property taxes with Salt Lake County, I'm sure other counties, at the end of 2017. Knowing that that cap was going to be in place for 2018, they could get the full benefit of the deduction if they paid it this year, or excuse me, in 2017. Well, and a lot of people also prepaid or paid charitable contributions. Well, the IRS came out just recently and said you can only deduct taxes to the extent that they're due. So if your tax bill said you owed $1,000 for property taxes, even if you paid $2,000, you can only deduct $1,000. So I believe the Salt Lake County treasurer recently said that they're going to actually refund, I think, up to $8 million in property taxes that had been prepaid in an attempt to maximize this strategy. Well, even though the payment of property taxes is not going to be allowed, or even income taxes, the IRS has said the payment of charitable contributions are not within those auspices. So something, it's called bunching, where you would pay all of your charitable contributions that maybe you have budgeted in a particular tax year. The next year you take the standard deduction. Individuals, it's $12,000, married, filing, jointly, it's $24,000, and then the next year they pay the contributions, take the all itemized basically. So they itemize every other year. So I'm not giving tax advice. I'm suggesting that's a topic that you research to see if it may be of interest to you. So anyway, two tax things that we'll be keeping. Well, keep an eye on the itemization and ability to deduct contributions to local charities, and so we may look at legislation on that. So with that, I'll turn it over to Howard to get into our featured presentation.
Thank you. So we're going to be Mutt and Jeff up here. We're going to be sharing the mic, and you can decide which one is Mutt and which one is Jeff, or which one is Tweedle and which one is Dumb. So I appreciate Joe Henchman being here today with the Tax Foundation of Washington, D.C. They are a tremendous resource for state tax policy organizations like the Utah Taxpayers Association, and we appreciate all that they do to help us do our job better. And as he mentioned, Indiana has pulled into the pit stop because they've changed their chair that has done so much to make their state competitive with Utah. So this gives us opportunities. And we began this process of taking these opportunities last session about this time when the speaker and the president decided that they wanted to look at major tax reform. And they had the support of the governor as well. But there just wasn't enough time in that session to get it accomplished. And so Representative Elison and I were chosen as chairs of the Revenue and Taxation Interim Committee to help study everything. So at least we've spent the entire year studying different options. And we want to talk to you about some of those today. Some people are saying, why on earth is Utah worried if we're number one in so many things? We just saw that we slipped to number two in best managed state of the nation, and we have a potential for slipping in other areas too if we don't stay ahead of the curve. And that's the purpose today. And so what we're going to see from these slides is some of the things that we've been looking at, what you might want to consider. But as you know, we don't know what's going to happen until the final night of the legislative session. Some things may look like they're going to pass or fail, but until midnight on the final night, we can't be sure. So we'll start now with the fact that we went over principles of tax policy. The committee looked at all of those, and we wanted to get grounded in all of those before we started looking at different options, because that would help set the stage for which options we ought to look at seriously and which ones we shouldn't. We won't go through all of those principles at this time, but we wanted you to know that the committee looked very deeply at each one of these. So then we have the proposals that we are currently looking at, and Steve, do you want to begin to review those?
Sure. So a topic that we've spent a lot of time on is expanding the single sales factor. We're now in the minority of states that don't allow this option for the apportionment of the payment of state income taxes. I believe even California now has single sales factor, and obviously our business climate is, I believe, much more favorable than California. So that's a very important policy that we'll be pursuing. Clarifying nexus for corporate income tax. This isn't quite as scary as it sounds. Basically, this would be just codifying what is the current practice with the State Tax Commission in terms of the nexus for certain intangible property and services. But this is not the, quote, internet taxation bill that has received a lot of attention during previous years. Repeal the net operating loss carryback. So NOLs are something that corporations regularly use that are, if they're losing money in a particular tax year, they can spread those currently backwards and forwards to reduce their effective tax rate over a multi-year period. Utah is one of the very few states that actually has a three-year carryback. Many states don't even allow a carryback. Now, keep in mind, we're not planning to touch the carry forward, so corporations that have NOLs could use those going forward to limit their taxable income. So for a practical effect for a profitable company, this should really have little to no impact.
And Senator Bramble is giving us some real input on this too, because he's making the argument that we ought to at least keep it at some level. So we'll be debating that.
Fourth point, increase accountability for recycling zone income tax credits. This is simply requiring a little bit more documentation and accountability for this tax credit. We have a number of tax credits, and this is the only one that currently doesn't have some of the kind of robust reporting requirements. Do you want to cover the electric vehicles?
Sure. We looked at the fact that all users of the highway ought to be paying their fair share for that use. And as you heard from Representative Christofferson, his task force has been looking at that as well. There's also the option of extending the tax credit for purchasing electrical vehicles, which had expired. And so we're going to be looking at that.
The next bullet point, expand the manufacturing and sales tax exemption to include materials used or consumed in the manufacturing process. A good example of this would be if you're in the food manufacturing. Let's say that you are producing cookie dough. You wouldn't be paying sales tax on the input of the flour and the chocolate chips and the butter. But in the manufacturing process in Utah, if you are using maybe a tube of grease or some disposable towels or different things of that nature, you're paying sales tax on that. And those are really manufacturing inputs. What it does is simply increase the cost to the final consumer that then will typically pay sales tax on the finished product. So it's effectively double taxation. So looking to expand that exemption, also exempting machinery and equipment and parts with less than a three-year economic life. Those are effectively in the business world looked at as consumables. And so this would allow a number of companies to not have to look elsewhere to, if they're going to expand, they right now it may be more profitable to go to a state where these items are not subject to sales tax. And so we believe would help improve our business economy. Standardize the rate cap for the school board local levy.
There is currently a two-rate cap for school districts, depending on whether you happen to be above the cap or not. There wasn't a rational basis, except that we wanted to, as a legislature several years ago, ensure that taxes can't go too high. And there's an argument now, especially as part of this effort for equalization that we'll talk about in just a minute, to ensure that everybody has the same cap on their school property taxes. Then the other issue is freezing the basic rate. We'll talk about that in a minute too, regarding the issue of funding equalization, because we have gross inequities in the amount of local property taxes that are generated per student in each of our districts. And then part of this property tax effort also would be to allow a portion of inflation to be in the certified tax rate. And we'll explain that a little bit more further in just a minute. And then simplifying the truth in taxation ads. Right now, those quarter page ads, and they also appear online, are confusing to people. And so we've kind of got agreement that we ought to simplify that so that you get notice of a tax increase that's being proposed by cities, counties, school districts, but it's more understandable in explaining it to you of how that impacts you. So let's then talk about equalization, if we could. What you see there in that chart, in the orange part, on the lower part, is the amount of money raised per student for each school district in the state. And it's based on a tax increment in each of those districts and what it would generate per student. As you can see, those are gross inequities. we have Park City over to the left, and then you have other districts over to the right that generate on a very high tax rate just a fraction of the amount per student that is generated in, say, Park City. We're not proposing to get everybody to Park City's level, but what we are proposing is that we ought to at least equalize everybody to the second place. The part in green is the amount of equalization that we've accomplished so far through Senator Osmond's bill of a few years ago, plus other things that we did before that. But there's a crying need to ensure that taxes per student in each district generate equal opportunities. For example, Tooele School District, which is one of those over to the right, is unable to compete for teachers, and they're losing teachers throughout the year, and this would prevent them from losing those. So that would be part of this proposal to raise this $744 million would be to freeze the basic rate so that it wouldn't go down every year with inflation, and then to take a portion of the growth in the income tax and dedicate it to that purpose. In 1985, I was not in the legislature. I was a lobbyist for the Taxpayers Association, and I helped to negotiate the Truth in Taxation law at that time. And I have to admit to you that we got more as taxpayers than we were asking, that we expected. Every other state that has had serious tax limitation has at least given an accommodation for inflation, because it costs more each year to pay for police and fire and school teachers, and therefore there was that reasonable expectation of taking some amount for inflation. You remember in 1978, the Proposition 13 by Howard Jarvis in California, even that gave a 2% growth every year in inflation to pay for the increased cost of government. Utah gives zero. We lower the certified rate every year by whatever the county assessor increases local values. And that means that in order to recapture inflation, elected bodies have to go through this truth in taxation process, and they have not done so. And so this is just one proposal, is to give some sort of inflationary adjustment for that. Contrast that with our schools now proposal. $715 million is what they're asking for. We talked with Nolan Karras, who is a former Speaker of the House, and he is helping our schools now with that initiative. Ask him, if we were to freeze the rate and dedicate $744 million for equalization, and if we were to give an inflationary adjustment on those other local levies, which would amount to about $230 million over 10 years for school districts, would that get you to pull back on your initiative? And he said, we will consider that, because that seems to be an authentic way of trying to reach those goals that they are trying to reach in that.
Yeah, so sometimes when you talk about single sales factor and corporate apportionment, you'll a lot of times see people's heads go down onto their table or quickly looking at their cell phone. I haven't seen that so far, so we'll keep this short and sweet. But basically, just to make sure we're not flying kind of too high, when we talk about corporate apportionment, what we're talking about is if you are a corporation with multi-state operations, at the end of the year when you file your taxes, let's say that you made, we'll just keep this really simple, $100. How do you pay that in the multiple taxing jurisdictions that you operate in? Do you get effectively double taxed, triple taxed, or maybe not even effectively taxed 100% on that income? So many states now have moved to single sales factor, where they simply say, use your total company sales as the method to distribute, to apportion that taxable income. So if you had $1,000 in sales, And 500 was in Colorado and 500 was in Utah, and you made $100 profit, then in Colorado, your taxable income would be $50, and in Utah, your taxable income would be $50, and you would pay your taxes accordingly. Right now, we have the three-factor apportionment, which is based on sales, property, and the number of employees. And so it can become a very complex calculation. And literally, if you, depending on your footprint in other states and what their apportionment formula is, you may end up paying, having a very effective high state income tax rate because you just haven't kind of located your operations accordingly to maximize the tax benefit. Well, corporations shouldn't be, that tail shouldn't be wagging the dog of where you do your business. That should be the, you know, proverbial invisible hand of where your business is going to flourish. So by coming in line with many other states in the nation in terms of saying we're just going to have one factor, single sales factor that you can apportion your income on, we believe it'll be, make Utah a much more friendly place to do business, make us more economically competitive, and hopefully incentivize current businesses to expand and not relocate to other states.
So we will have some industry sectors that will still be able to choose. For example, banks. Right now, banks and credit unions are competing. Credit unions pay no taxes, banks do, and therefore it's rational to say banks ought to be able to choose the weighting formula that advantages them and gets them closer to their credit union competitors. So you will be seeing some options there left so that companies can be competitive. You can see here a history of the apportionment formula, how the blue on the top shows that 34 states now have single weighted formula. And in fact, in California, it wasn't done by the legislature, it was done by an initiative, a jobs initiative, saying if you have your payroll here, if you have your plant and equipment here, and you're selling most of things out of state, we want you to pay virtually no corporate income tax to be able to keep you in our state. So if California electorate can do something like that, surely the Utah legislature can. Then we have the sales tax exemption on manufacturing. When I sponsored this legislation in 1995, we got it all the way across to exempt everything, except we discovered a couple of years later that the fiscal note was wrong, so we clawed back the three-year life, and we've kind of chipped away at it for a little while for since then, but we haven't gotten everybody to the end of the row, and it only seems rational that we go all the way and get rid of that penalty for investing in Utah. As you can understand, if you've got a company with one shift of employees and you expand, we don't want to punish you for wearing out your equipment sooner.